Good day and welcome to the Business Success Network podcast. I'm Stacey Calder, founder of the Business Success Network and magazine, and we help you to grow you and grow your business. We want to get you as visible as possible online, offline, and through events such as networking, awards, and conferences. If you're sitting here and listening to this and thinking this is a great show, we are looking for guests to be part of it. We want to hear your story and we want to share your information with the public. We want you to be as visible as possible. So join us over at the Business Success Network UK on Facebook, join the community, get the support, become a cheerleader for other small businesses, and we'll see you very soon. Hi everybody and welcome to the Business Success Network and Magazine podcast. It is Stacey Calder who founded this. Crikey, it's been going for so long now that I forget how long we've been on a podcast, but it's got to be a fair few years now. And I'm really excited because during that time, we've had some amazing business owners. We've had some fantastic decision makers, but we have never had this guest yet. So Michael Cox is joining me. I don't know what we're going to talk about because normally I have a structure and it's all about business success and things like that. But with Michael, it's like we've got so much we can talk about. In fact, I did say to him, you know, do we talk about politics? Do we not? Do we talk? You know, there's just so much. So I'm going to welcome Michael into the podcast. Welcome, welcome. I was sitting here when you mentioned Gen Z the other day. I was like, does this make you the youngest guest we've had on the podcast? Don't know. So we were just saying backstage in the green room, wherever you like. I think we met while you were at uni.
Yeah.
You'd got this speaker's corner going and you wanted to promote it and publicize it. And so I'm guessing you've done a lot of public speaking since then. You've really kind of honed your craft. So do you want to just give a bit of an introduction into who you are, why you think I've dragged you on today, and what we're going to talk about?
Of course. No, thank you, Stacey, so much. So my name is Michael Cox. I'm 23. I'm a graduate from Durham University. And I suppose what makes me is all of the mad and crazy things that I end up doing, whether it's working with our town twinning association, Leamington Spa, liaising with the mayor of France and the mayor of Rousseau in France, which is our twin town, or doing lots of public speaking stuff, helping to really coach people in the art of the oratorical skill, and generally just getting out there and doing lots more other things, including politics. So I'm well-rounded, I think it's fair to say. There's always a sense that my diary and life are governed by the number of pies that I've got my fingers in all the plates that I'm spinning, but it's all very interesting and enjoyable.
And obviously we've just had the general election, which, you know, your diary would have been so busy because you were kind of campaign managing and all that kind of thing. Is that something that you got into at uni and you kind of found a love for it? Or was it always intentional that you were going to go into politics? You're just such a busy person that I know a few weeks ago, I would never have been able to get you on the podcast. You've got so much going on. So, yeah, is it something you've always wanted to do?
No, I think I've always loved the idea of it. And I'm quite a sad individual in some regards. You know, I remember watching PMQ's Prime Minister's Question Time on the BBC when it was on at every, you know, 12 o'clock instalment on the Wednesdays. I initially wanted to become a judge. I was very keen on the idea of Michael Cox a la Rumpole or Rumpole the Bailey, really embracing that kind of Sermon on the Mount style of career. But and then it was diplomat. And I think it was quite an interesting one because I thought, oh, I'd love to be a diplomat. You know, traveling sounds great, doing lots of really cool things around policy and talking to lots of people, all the things that would float my boat. But I realised pretty early on, this probably won't work too well because I've got too many opinions. I've got too many conviction in those opinions. I don't want to rub anybody up, you know, the wrong way and cause World War III whilst I'm at it. So I think politics has found me and I definitely have sought it out off my bat, I think. I mean, when we drove, so obviously I went to Durham, as I was saying earlier, And when we drove up that kind of 3.5 hour drive, that only where you normally kind of have your goodbyes and maybe share memories, I was on my phone scrolling through all the Tory candidates to see who I could help out with during because the 2019 election was coming, whether we liked it or not. And I think, yeah, it's found me and I've loved it. And I've definitely been very much stuck in, whether it's been when I was working up in the north or working, here locally in Warwickshire.
That's amazing. And I think it take I love what you said about, you're very opinionated, and I think politics is great for that. And I think it can also be quite nerve-wracking for people as well. So I've definitely through my experience of politics, which isn't as much as you, I've ran a couple of times at local levels and things like that. But what I found was, and I think this is how we connected, those local sort of student associations are brilliant for getting young people involved in politics. They've really got, giving them their eyes open to it and to those experiences. And that then helps obviously local candidates, local MPs, things like that, to kind of really get their message out there. So I think that's how we definitely came across each other. And obviously we've talked more about public speaking and you're very passionate about that. Do you think that's, I mean, it's a skill. It definitely in itself, I run conferences and things where, we have a number of speakers. It's not a bad skill to have, is it? Whether it's politics, whether it's business, it's something that everybody needs to be able to do, right? So what is it you do? How do you coach people with that? How do you make them feel at ease and confident in what they're saying?
Cool. So I suppose it's worth going back slightly to work out why I was doing public speaking in the first place. And I went to Warwick School, which is a local school where we both are. And I was asked to do this vote of thanks for a chap called Sotewet being prisoner of war, having to go into really quite scary, conflict-ridden situations and try and do some mediation around those occurrences. And so I was doing this vote of thanks, and apparently, it was all right because the president of the Leamington Smile Speakers Club, which is one club amongst a whole load of others, kind of grabbed me, got a husband who works at the school to get me over to the Speakers Club. And I just kind of started to do what I was doing then. So we've got clubs across the country. We call the Association of Speakers Clubs. And what we do is we basically, wherever somebody is, because they might, a lot of people who come to the club meetings from across the country have got some experience of public speaking before. They're not totally new to this, but some of them are. And I think it's about that equalizing of that level playing field. So whatever you've done in the past, you come and you kind of go through what we call assignments, where we're looking really into the nuts and bolts of what makes a fantastic speaker. So how you connect to with an audience, how you build that rapport, what kind of things do you use in speaking, be it humor, gestures, really going back to basics. And that kind of acts as a springboard. So once you've done about nine of these, you then come to do your what we call the number 10 colloquially, and that's really kind of summation, a compilation of all of your greatest hits as a speaker. And 9 times out of 10 it goes really well and everyone's very happy, and it's proof in the pudding really, and it's great to watch. But yeah, I think what we do is we basically take a very literal view, but I think it's the crucial bit. We do it in a very careful, compassionate and loving way. What I love about our clubs is they're like mini communities, and the way in which we kind of increase personal development, we upskill, but do it in a very safe space is so crucial because this is such a scary thing to do. I mean, it's a, I think it's like one of the massive public fears that people have got. It's way up that list above pigeons and heights and spiders and things. It really puts the fear of God into people, and so you've got to have that kind of safe environment for people to grow and thrive and flourish within, because if you don't, they just don't come back. And that's not only bad for us as a club because we've lost, a budding member, but also it sets them back in their kind of speaking career so much. As soon as you take that confidence hit, once you put yourself out there, it's so much harder to build back and recuperate oneself and go through it again.
Absolutely. Yes, I definitely agree. I was talking to a business mentor and a speaker only probably last week before, and they were actually sharing their experience. They are one of the number one speakers in the UK now, but they were saying you can only learn to be that by you know, going, learning the craft, repeat, repeat. And he says there will be times where you will, and he has, not engaged with the audience. Something just wasn't right. You know, that fear of, and he often quite says, you know, to be a public speaker, actually, you've almost got to be slightly insane, because to go up there and put yourself out there, especially if you've already, you know, died a death, as he said, on stage, to then get back and carry on and go, okay, that was a learning curve. It takes something, and that, you know, you've got to keep building your confidence. So, yes.
No, it absolutely is bonkers. It's bonkers that we actually take pleasure and we enjoy this as a hobby. I honestly think some people think we must be crackers, but that's a testament to what we're creating. And what we're creating is this kind of family sense of community, because everybody's got to do this now. It is so, so important to be able to do. I think particularly post-pandemic. So we obviously had that kind of really weird and crazy bit where everybody was having to do public speaking, but in a very different way, on kind of Teams and Zoom, and that those words became part of our lexicon for life.
I have to say, I think Teams overnight is now a swear word to me, I'll be really honest. Zoom is fine, but Teams, yeah.
It's mad. And suddenly, you know, out of nowhere, not only are people having to change the way they communicate at those meetings, in those offices, those virtual offices, but we had to completely change our model, because we were literally putting a group of people in a room with a lectern at the front of the room in person. And so we had to kind of rewrite the manual. We rewrote the manual to speak online. I don't think, I mean, obviously some people would be doing this, and there are always people out there who get onto these things miles and light years ahead of everybody else and really kind of make them their own and master them. But for us, as our kind of quite amateur budding association, this was crazy, because we had to kind of literally start fresh. But I'm really proud of what we did, because what we kind of created was this idea of taking our guide, taking our assignments and doing them online. And loads of things change. You know, the key things are, how do you occupy this box? So this box governs you. It's you know, how you can create impact and deliver conviction on a box amongst a whole bunch of other boxes is really quite difficult. And it's a completely different skill set to being able to work a room, right? You know,
absolutely. So, you can go and light up a room. You can go and engage with people face to face. But actually, if you're speaking to, you know, 20, 30 boxes, and let's face it, you've got other kind of challenges. People might turn their camera off, all those kinds of things that actually, you know, it is a skill. And even, you know, the tech behind it, I said to you earlier, someone does all my tech stuff, but, you know, I just sit here and waffle on to guests and let them get on with it. But there, you know, the tech side of it is a challenge to some people. And I think COVID was a nightmare for some things. You know, it was not great. But me and my husband were saying yesterday, I look back on it with some really great memories. And I think one of those was the online networking, the online speaker. Suddenly my business went from me networking quite locally, Warwickshire, kind of Coventry, to suddenly this whole of the UK and beyond. Suddenly my message, and I'm sure yours as well, could be heard with a much wider circle. So I think, yeah, for those people that adapted, like your speakers meeting, you've probably given them a whole new skill set now, not just around public speaking, but speaking online and everything as well. So,
absolutely. And the two are, you know, completely different subsets of skills. I totally agree with what you were saying about this idea of this kind of extended community overnight. You know, in my role, I've got to kind of go around clubs, and you kind of end up doing about, you know, maybe 10 if you're lucky, over the year, but suddenly you were able to literally go to anywhere from this room. So, you know, I was in Perth, Edinburgh, whatever. And then also we had a whole bunch of people from Spain and the States and Denmark and Sweden who were jumping on our calls, becoming members, because some of our clubs have actually stayed online. You know, they believe that the offering they're doing is good enough, which I totally agree with. I've seen them in action, and it's great to have that of different speaking skills under our association label. Because we really are being able to serve, you know, everybody who wants to do that sort of speaking wherever they are in the country, which is great. If you are interested in becoming a better public speaker, learn new speaking skills, and find your voice, then why not join a speakers club? The Association of Speakers Clubs is a national voluntary organisation dedicated to helping you to find your authentic voice and build up your speaking skills. With its CPD accredited 10-stage programme, you can hone your craft in a warm and compassionate environment. Whether you are a speaking novice or want to land that next promotion, Speakers Clubs can help you to thrive and succeed. Find your nearest club today by visiting www.the-asc.org.uk or simply search Association of Speakers Clubs. We look forward to welcoming you on your speaking journey.
We've talked a lot about speaking, but when I read your bio earlier, it mentions a communications consultants company. And so that made my ears prick up because within our business success network, we have what we call the 10 business pillars. And those are things like, you know, you would imagine sales, marketing, health and wellness, because obviously if you're not well, your business isn't well. So there's 10 pillars. And one of those is communication. So communication, you know, without it, businesses are going to struggle. We know that. It's one of our pillars that we work on. So obviously you've said that you've got a communication consultancy business. What does that look like? How do you help people? Who are your kind of ideal clients, if you like? If someone's listening to this thinking, aha, what is it you do?
I think I've used a very broad label deliberately because I end up doing lots of things that aren't, you know, quantifiable by one term, but essentially the business kind of provides political communications in the main. So we're working with different associations, conservative associations and candidates up and down the country to advise them on how to win elections, really. We're essentially ripping off the, I think, Danny Finkelstein, Peter Mandelson podcast with the same name. But yeah, and it was well-timed because I kind of got to a point where I thought, actually, just give this a go myself, and found some work quite quickly on to get stuck into and be able to use the expertise that I've gained, which isn't, you know, obviously masses and masses, but I've got that kind of on the ground experience, and I know how these things tick and work, and it's been brilliant to be able to share that and work in that sec off my own back. But I think the reason why we use comms and not political comms is because I end up doing lots of other things as well with helping people on their podcasts and stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got, you know, friends with podcasts. I've seen you've got colleagues and things that have got different avenues. And I think even when you niche down to one thing, you will still find people in other industries, in other markets that say, hey, yeah, this is me, and I want your services. So if you were to put political communications, I can see how that, you know, people might go, oh, no, that's not what I'm looking for. But actually, when you start looking at what you do, the office manager stuff, the how to win this, you know, what marketing stuff do they need? It is all communications, isn't it? And so, yeah, it's fascinating. I never thought I would do social media for political candidates, but I've done some of that. I never thought I would do social media for charities. And I don't, like you say, so I talk about visibility for all. But actually, you know, they're two kind of niches that I could and have niched down into, but would turn others off had I said, hey, I do social media for politics or, you know, for charities. I still want the small businesses to come in and say, it's okay, we can use Stacey. So,
yeah, I mean, that's, you kind of hit the nail on the head, because what I like to think, you know, I do, whether it's, you know, getting the InDesign out and doing loads of graphic design overnight and it takes forever and it's really fun and we produce great stuff. You know, that skill set is so transferable. You know, it can work with whoever wants that kind of services. And it's been great to have that with charities, with other people's podcasts, and of course the politics stuff as well. So lots of different things, but all under one roof.
Yeah, you've certainly got your fingers in a lot of pies, all under that umbrella, though, which I love. Now, we did mention earlier generations, and I mentioned that we'd probably known each other since uni. And when I first asked you to be on the podcast, I said, what are we going to talk about? And you mentioned Gen Z and jobs and careers and things like that. And it's been really interesting to hear your kind of career and what you've got going on. But what is it that makes you passionate then about Gen Z and jobs and things like this? Because I think, well, I'm a millennial, and you were laughing at me earlier because I'm actually a geriatric millennial, as somebody told me the other week, which I was really angry about because I don't want to be told I'm old. But then I read the description and thought, that is me. They are very well at describing each generation. So you are Gen Z, obviously. My daughter, who's 16, has just told me she's just in the Gen Z category as well. It's not something, and I don't know if this is a millennial thing or it's not something I've took a massive amount of time to look at the different generations and the categories. But obviously, I think with younger generations, they are very much at the forefront of a lot of things. You know, I see these quizzes and these tasks and different stuff going on. So when you said, let's talk about jobs and careers for Gen Z, I am here for this, but I am going to let you lead on it because I don't know. What is it? Do you think jobs are the way people work? They're massively different. Do you think it's bringing in a whole new skill set? I have to say, well, in terms of public speaking, I think your generation are cottoning on to this much quicker than my generation did. You know, we're kind of the older ones that are realizing that to have a voice is great. You guys have got that voice already.
Yeah, I think it's probably best summed up by looking at two sides of the same coin, because we've got an awful lot going for Gen Z at the moment. To see flexibility, actually all the stuff, you know, the post-COVID stuff around the hybrid workplace works really well for everybody, but particularly I think our lot, who are juggling lots of different things in an increasingly uncertain world, and you know, to be able to have that flexibility around literally where you work and the environment in which you're completing tasks and getting on with life is brilliant. I do think though that we are in a much more fragile time. I think we've got a lot of issues that I don't think we've quite cracked. If anything, we're just beginning to identify them. And you know, if you look at the pandemic and what that kind of left behind in its wake, obviously we know about the vaccines, we know about care homes, we know about all that sort of stuff on a national level. But I think what the one thing that we did forget was young people. And I think particularly students. I mean, I heard awful stories from friends who had either kind of recently graduated and suddenly found themselves alone in kind of one bed apartments in London, unable to go outside because in the initial lockdown, it was kind of big no to do anything. And the mental health problems that has created are immense. And I don't think we've even begin to do any of the catch up work to address them yet. And if you look at somebody who's going into a graduate role now, what was kind of a representative of stability and assurance, you know, there's a very archetypal common route to this sort of thing. You do your second year internship whilst you're at your university. You spend your first term of third year getting through the graduate test, and then you leave university, hopefully with the grade you wanted and a job waiting for you. And so I think that's why it was so shocking when Deloitte, I think early this year or the end of last year, got rid of a load of graduate positions. So these were people who had come into the business for maybe a year, maybe 6 months, very, very early on, you know, expected to have this kind of brilliant career at Deloitte and were gone. And so you've got people who've gone, you know, from all kind of walks of life, from all over the country, getting a London tenancy agreement. Well done them. It's very difficult to do so, and then find themselves out of a job in what should be one of the safest jobs going. So there's a lot of problems around, I think, security, well-being, sense of self and identity. You know, how do you find your authentic self in a sea of inauthenticity where nobody quite work out who they are, what they want to do with their time and their lives? I think if we want to address this stuff, we've got to get a much stronger position on mental health within universities, within institutions. I remember writing something a while ago during the pandemic where I couldn't quite get my head around why workplaces were going above and beyond to ensure that their employees had a safe space, that they were being looked after, that they were being treated with compassion and with care and attention. And yet in universities where we were all paying our fair share into the system, there just seemed to be an absence of that kind of response, duty and diligence that we saw in the workplace. And I thought that was a bit odd. So
And I have heard some horror stories. I've heard some horror stories from students that, you know, they'd paid all their tuition fees, they'd done everything else, they'd moved across the country, and then suddenly lockdown happened. They didn't really know how, the lessons weren't being taught. There was lots of other things going on. And I think, yeah, you've got to be of strong character to come out of that completely unfazed, I think. And I think you're right. I think there was lots of, not just students, but and actually younger students. So we homeschooled, we'd got a whole, you know, and people were saying to me, crikey, you're really strict. You've got your kids around the table doing home learning, like actual school time. And I said, yeah, because if I don't, they're going to run riot in a house. It will be feral. And, you know, then I want to keep some stability and some normality. Now, when you're a student, you're at uni, you have, that's almost on you. You've not got your parents or your tutors around to say, be really structured, do this, how are you doing? So I can imagine it must have been a very lonely time for students to suddenly go from a very social kind of time of their life to not being, you know, allowed out in a bar or, you know, study groups, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think another concern would be when you're carrying all that, you know, in some cases it would have been trauma. It would have been, you know, absolutely, it would have been trauma. And when you're carrying all of that anxiety, that trauma, and then the, you know, in a year's time, i.e. you know, now and last year, right, now go and get a job. I mean, there's, you know, this throwing yourself into the deep end, and then there's this, and it's staggering because, as I said, the job market is not playing nicely with us at the moment. With graduates, we're having to go against the grain. I think the way we are learning, the way we are pursuing subjects and passions, I think is difficult because, you know, if you're going into law and you want to be a barrister, you know, obviously people will get those jobs, but it's going to be very difficult because you're literally competing against so many different age groups. You're competing against the ones who were in the mix, you know, just before you, the ones who were above them, who did a bit of experience, taking some time off. And this kind of, these hurdles were immense.
It seems like there's a lot more candidates now for a lot less positions.
Yeah. I mean, essentially that's it because, you know, we're not, although there are vacancies, we're being particularly picky. I don't think we're treating people, again, with that kind of dignity. I saw on Twitter the other day, just as a quick snapshot, this woman was applying for a job at Cafe Nero as a team leader. She got 5 years of working as a barista, as a team leader. She got working as a barista for 5 years. She got 2 years working as a team leader, doing that exact role. She got great references. She got brilliant expertise. She didn't even get an interview. She got the standard copy. You're not successful. And you think, what's going on there? Because that's really quite odd. And, you know, it feels a bit like, I think, talking to people, listening to people, that you can do so, so much, and yet you can still face that brick wall. And I suppose the thing I've learned, in, you know, as a graduate, doing what I do and talking to people and obviously speaking, is that I think the key message would be, you can't go for one thing anymore. We have to be so much more flexible with the opportunities that we seek, because if we don't do that, we're narrowing ourselves off so much that we're not going to become successful and do what we want. And I heard a great thing the other day, which was, let's say you're training as a dentist and you want to become a dentist, but at the moment things aren't going too well. And you're ending up as a perfume seller, not in a kind of shop, but in the shopping centre, you know, one of those little stands. And it was actually Philippa Perry. So Philippa Perry, Grace and Perry's wife, some brilliant work in the mental health space and the psychology and particularly child psychology as well. And Philippa basically said, if you're this perfume seller, you're probably going to hate your job. You're probably going to be thinking every single day you go to work, yeah, I want to be a dentist. This is beneath me. I've got a master's. I've got a doctorate, maybe. I've got an undergraduate degree. I've got all this tuition fees that I've spent, big student loans. Why am I doing what I'm doing? And Philippa says, ignore all of that. Become the best perfume seller you can be. Go out there, find the perfumes, learn everything there is to learn about the scents, about the different bottles, about the different brands, and, you know, have those conversations with your customer base. talk to them about the perfume, talk to them about all the things you've learned. And if you do that, if you really commit, you would enjoy it eventually. And this woman, the woman that she was coaching through, and you know, she then went on to dentistry in her own time. I think the point is, we've got lots of obstacles. There's no natural rhythm anymore. We're being pulled in lots of different directions. And if you can find some form of stability, whether it's perfume selling or baristering or whatever, or a research project or taking some time off, take the time, work out, recalibrate, refresh, and then come back, because these jobs, although the market is tricky now, it won't always be as tricky then and now in the future.
That's amazing. So I was saying when we started, I normally ask people for, you know, what's their top tip for business? But I think you've just given us quite a few tips for, you know, graduates and for Gen Z that are looking for roles. When you said about the CV there for the barista, I get that, because I, very long time ago in a previous life, was running a coffee shop very long time ago, like you say, to get you through college, to get you through all those kinds of things. And the industry back then, hospitality, it was where everybody went to get those jobs, to get that experience. And if that person has that and they're not even getting, you know, their CV's been read and they're not even getting that interview, that is quite shocking. So thank you for that. What would be then your top tips for your generation, for Gen Z, if they are out there at the minute looking for a role? What would be your takeaway?
I think number one takeaway is cast net wide open. Don't have tunnel vision on any one role, sector or opportunity, because you're limiting yourself off. We have so much going for us. We are doing so much more than before, you know, whether it's society stuff, charity work, whatever. People just seem to be doing a hell of a lot more, which is fantastic to see. So just go for everything. You know, look at everything up. Don't be afraid to pick things that might seem a bit random and bizarre, a bit crazy. Embrace all of that. And this is not a race. There is no urgency around this. Of course, we've all got to get jobs. We've got to get money coming in the bank. But you are not saddling yourself up to a career in whatever it might be from day one in year one of leaving university. And it's the same thing about we did our A-levels. You know, those subjects are not going to haunt you for the rest of your life. It's okay to take a step back and change your mind. And I think people employers understand that they might get a candidate who's done, let's say, a psychology degree applying for, I don't know, a role that might not necessarily suit that kind of archetypal stuff that we've always been taught. And history students aren't always going to be history teachers or all be working in museums, or they might end up being in sales. Cast the net open, look for all opportunities. Nothing is a bonkers idea. Just go for it.
I love that. Nothing is a bonkers idea. And what about to those employers and those business owners that are, you know, they're recruiting at the minute? What would you say to them? What's your top tip or your message to them regarding recruiting Gen Z?
I could understand how difficult it must be to have thousands and thousands potentially of applicants for one role, and nobody is going to get like a tailor-made response. I think it would be, you know, kindness. Overarching kindness in everything that you do. The onboarding, you know, recruiting is always going to be difficult. This is not a mode. This is not a massive go at every employer in the country. But that onboarding, the care, the attention, creating the support network, everything that happens in those few months, those first few months, is crucial. And it'd be helpful for you, right? You know, much more likely to retain your employees, much less likely for them to get scouted and leave you. You can put in that time, you can put in that development and personal growth into them, and you will get the benefits and the dividends that inevitably arise in doing so. So kindness, always good. And yeah, creating that safe space.
I think that is a brilliant place to leave it on. I said we'd do around half an hour. We've been talking for about 35 minutes now, but I think we can always end with a bit of kindness, can't we? I think that's, you know, that's what should make the world go round. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. Can you just tell everybody before you go, where is the best place for them to connect with you? Where can they find out more?
LinkedIn. So I'm on LinkedIn. I don't know if it's, I don't know what the username is. I'm not very good at being Gen Z half the time either. But no, yeah, if you search Michael Cox and find the funky hair, you'll be all right.
I
And
love
you'll go to
that.
the next.
Search Michael Cox and find the funky hair. I have to say, you were more doing your hair today. For those of you watching on YouTube, he was definitely sorting out his hair before we came on. For those of you that are listening on Apple or audio, you'll just have to go over to YouTube and find it now just to look at the funky hair. So go over to LinkedIn, go and find Michael Cox. It's always full of fantastic stories. Go and ask him more about his speaking and things like that. Or if you're interested in his communications company, then do go and check him out. Michael, what's next?
What's next? I think I'm going to have some time. It's been a very busy few weeks, and I think I'm going to go on holiday. I'm going to take a 1 hour break, and I'm going to come back fighting, ready for the next chapter.
Brilliant. Well, have a G&T for me, please.
Of course, no problem.
Oh, amazing. Folks, this has been the Business Success Network and Magazine podcast. If you've loved this, please do subscribe. Do head over to our Facebook community. Just search Business Success Network UK and come and network with a lot of small businesses within the UK who champion each other's visibility and just want to see everybody succeed. Thank you very much. So, you've been listening to the Business Success Network podcast. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Please do go and check out all the other episodes that we offer. We've got a great range of guests that have gone before us and that are coming up. And if you want to get involved in the Business Success Network, you can find us at www.businesssuccessnetwork.co.uk. There's loads of ways you can get involved, whether that's from contributing to our business magazine, or whether that's getting involved in the podcast. We are here to showcase your expertise and help you to grow you and grow your business.